coming to you from the Sherpa Chalet at the top of beautiful downtown Mount Podcastia. It's a special episode of Too Many Podcasts. I'm Jim the Podcast Sherpa, and today it's a special episode where I get to speak with people from the entertainment industry. So get yourself an aisle seat, pop up some popcorn, and get a cold drink ready, and sit back. Don't crunch too loud, or else you'll miss the interview from the Sherpa Screening Room. Hey there, Rebels of the Sherpalution. Don't worry, there's nothing wrong with your podcast player of choice or with the website, sherpalution.com. It's a bonus episode today of the Sherpa Screening Room. And after this episode featuring Dawn Moltrup and Dave Hamblin, we will be having an interview with director Michael Mueller. And Michael just came out with a brand new movie called The E-Listers, and you can catch that on Amazon. If you think that doubling up this week is crazy, we're going to do it all again next week, too. We're going to have two episodes, and we will be featuring my friend Selene Castrovilla and Christopher Carter of From Where I Sit. Selene co-wrote the book with previous guest Dr. Lindsay Callen Weisner, 10 Steps to Being Happy, and we had a really great interview. And Chris, I just had a lot of fun with, and he was our season finale for season two. And then after that, we have the season two wrap-up. And following that, if that's not enough, instead of our regular episode debuting on April 1st, it's going to be a whole week that week. From Monday, March 30th, to Friday, April 3rd, there's going to be an episode of the Sherpa Screening Room every day that week. That's right. Lots of interviews with people in the entertainment industry. But don't worry, we haven't given up on too many podcasts. The following week, you'll catch an episode of that too, with me, of course, talking to one of your favorite people with a podcast that maybe you heard of and maybe you didn't hear about. But we'll get to that in due time. We hope that you enjoy this special episode along with the other episode. So just to let you know, this week's episode and the following episodes, as always, are being brought to you by Audible. And you can get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/Sherpa. There's over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. First part of this show will be an interview with a lovely lady who is an actress, a model, a musician, a painter, and a mom, and an all-around nice person, too. I had a lot of fun talking to her. And your vote is someone you're going to want to vote for, folks. Doesn't matter what party you belong to. Your vote can help her appear on a billboard in Las Vegas. But we'll get to that in the interview. Let's hear my interview with Dawn Moltrup. Hello, Rebels. We are in the Sherpa Screening Room, and my guest today is a model and an actress who's done a lot of wonderful things for people, and we're going to talk about all of this stuff in our interview today. Please welcome to the Sherpa Chalet, Dawn Moltrup. How you doing, Dawn?
Good. I'm doing well. Thank you. How are you?
I am doing very well. Now, you are coming to us from way up in Vermont, and you guys, I guess winter to you is like nothing, right?
Oh, yeah. I love the outdoors, so I usually go hiking all over Vermont and New Hampshire in the wintertime, so I'm used to the cold.
Yeah, when people say it's 20 degrees, you go, big deal, it's 5 out, and I'm running a mile right now, right?
Well, I was just in New York City last weekend, and it was really funny because it was really cold for New York City last weekend, an unusual cold. But to me, of course, it was much warmer. And I went down, I found a Ben & Jerry's, got a huge ice cream cone in one of the stores down there. And the lady looks at me and she goes, are you from the movie Frozen? She says, you're eating an ice cream and it's freezing out. And I just started laughing because I was just like, well, I thought it was beautiful.
You should have said to her, well, what do you have for my snowman friend outside?
Oh, it's just too funny.
So why don't you tell a little bit about yourself, Dawn?
Well, I am a runway model. I have worked for a few different companies. I started out when I was younger. I took some time off and started back again modeling. I've done runway shows for Set New York City. They actually help to end child trafficking and raise awareness for the homeless. So I love working for them. I've worked for them multiple times and I support them. I love doing charity work for them. They're a great company. I've worked for L'Oreal and I work for Alicia Modeling, all around talent. I do a lot of hair tutorials So I really enjoy that. Right now, I have done a couple movies and I'm really enjoying it, trying to vamp up my movies a little bit more. And I'm in a runway competition coming up in August in Las Vegas. So it's an international runway competition that I'm looking forward to doing. And I have a competition actually starting up shortly on Facebook this Friday.
That's right. And we're going to make the listeners aware of that and how they can help you out in this competition too. So how did you first get involved in modeling?
Well, I started out when I was younger. I had just went to a couple interviews and I had a couple companies that were interested in me and I did it for a while and then I took a break. I had some kids, had a family and decided that I missed it. It was my passion. I loved it. So I started doing it again and I have so much fun with it. I meet so many different people from around the world, different countries, and I love making friends. I love hearing about other people's cultures, how they live. It's just people are fascinating.
Now, I know you said earlier before we were recording that you wanted to do the runway modeling also while you were doing the acting, kind of running them simultaneously, right?
Yes.
So you think that at some point you're going to have to choose one or the other, or you just want to just do whatever you can to keep it balanced?
I think I'm going to do whatever I can to keep it balanced. I love to keep busy and I love doing multiple things. So I'm also currently working on writing a book and I have a couple CDs that I have, some songs I wrote that are on CD now. So, I mean, I kind of dabble in all sorts of different things. I love music. I love to write songs. I love to sing. I love writing in general. So, I mean, I'm kind of doing a lot of different things at once.
Do you find the most challenging?
I think what I find the most challenging is juggling them all.
I like that answer, Dawn. Because you really definitely have to use different parts of your brain for each thing when you think about it, right?
Yes.
You know, because there's the musical side where, you know, you want to make it sound good and the lyrics have to be original and not something that people have heard 8 million times before.
And, oh, yes. I definitely have some original songs.
Well, that's good. Do you play any instruments also? Or
I play the piano.
Okay.
I like to paint and draw, relax. I draw faces. I can draw your face in like 15 minutes.
I don't know if you want to draw my face. It might scare people.
We'll make it cartoon.
There you go. Just say, people say, well, is that a caricature? And you could just say, okay, yes, it was. When it might be like an accurate portrait. What was your first acting gig about?
Well, when I came back to work, my first acting gig was the Soulmates movie. I was in that movie. There was a couple girls that came over to do the movie and I was so honored to be in that movie with them. It was awesome. I had so much fun. I loved everybody in there. I'm friends with everyone who is on the set now. We talk off and on and share stories because of course they're now traveling. They're in California. One just came back from Italy. I mean, they're everywhere. And just to be friends with them and hear their stories and talk to them and see their pictures is awesome.
What type of roles would you want when you get into a little bit heavier in your movie career?
I don't know. I kind of like variety.
So you like the comedy and the drama. And do you have any special actresses or actors that you admire that you kind of like their careers?
Oh, there's so many. I think everybody works so hard at acting and their jobs. And I appreciate everybody who does stuff like that. I mean, it's a lot of hard work, but it's fun. I mean, you got to have a job that you love. It's not worth doing if you don't.
This is your show for sipping tea. What do you buy? Tea. It clears the throat.
Tea, so.
So, did you ever have any unusual experiences while you were modeling when doing runways or anything like that?
Just once. The girl in ahead of me was wearing her heels and we had to go down the stairs. And a good thing it was just a practice run because she tripped. I tried to catch her and she was wearing a tube top. Well, when I tried to catch her, my hand grabbed the tube top and pulled it down. So then she took my hands and covered herself and she made me march with her to the bathroom to try and keep it hidden. So I was like, oh, great. I think that was the only funny thing. But like I said, it was rehearsal. So
at least you didn't have to worry about the ending up on as a YouTube video or something like that, right?
Oh, no, but it was so embarrassing. It was like everybody was looking.
Yeah, I know. I hate it when my tube top falls down, too. It's so scary.
I thought it was, it's funny. You know, things happen. It's sure. Just part of life.
Let's talk a little about the modeling competition that you're involved in.
Okay. It's, I'm going to be doing a platform on Facebook where I'm posting on this coming Friday a poster where I need people to either, I get points for likes, I get more points for comments, and then if people click on the modeling agency through my post and they actually click on the link for the modeling to follow them, I get 100 points. And the one who gets the most points gets their picture on a billboard in Las Vegas, Nevada with their name and the modeling agency.
Okay. And that's going to last for a whole month, right?
Yes. That's a 30-day challenge.
We can do, if you have a link, we could throw it in the show notes. So if people want to know where to go, we can just have them check it right there.
Well, it's Dawn Moltrup on Facebook. My Instagram is on there and all my other links, and it's pretty easy. I'm Dawn Moltrup on every single one of them.
We'll publish your Facebook link on the notes so they can just click it and follow it and help you out. And hopefully you will be overlooking the city of Vegas as a 12-foot-high or 30-foot-high woman.
That would be fantastic.
But so, is there anything else that you wanted to accomplish that you haven't yet?
I don't know. That's kind of hard. I mean, I'm doing everything that I want to do. I've got a notebook of everything I've done in a journal. So when my kids look back on it, they can be like, oh, well, let's find mom. Where was she in this? So it's kind of something that I'm saving for down the road for them. So,
you know, how do your kids deal with you being away for doing shows and filming and stuff like that?
Oh my gosh, they get so excited. They want to hear all about it. They're excited to go. Sometimes I bring them, sometimes I don't. I mean, depends on what's going on. So that's right. My daughter's 18, so.
Oh, okay. So they're not little kids, so they understand that this is what mom does and this is what she's going to do.
Oh yeah. They support me. They're super excited. They love it. I have a great family support system, so I couldn't ask for anything more.
That's fantastic. Cause I know sometimes people get into this sort of business and, you know, sometimes their families don't have any faith in them and they're like, why are you doing this? But at least if they're there to cheer you on and, you know, those are the people that are most important to you in your life, I'm sure.
Parents are great. My grandparents, my family, everybody I know is very supportive of everything I've ever done. And I think they always will be. I have a big family with a lot of love.
If there was anybody that you could work with in a movie, who would it be?
I don't know. I like a lot of the actors and actresses. I loved Matthew McFadden. I thought he was fantastic. Tom Hanks, Arnold Schwarzenegger. Boy, there's so many out there. I think there's so many fantastic actors and actresses. I'd pick any of them.
I like to ask a lot of the actors that we had on here, if there was a role in a movie that you could play, whether it was a past movie or a recent movie, what would it be?
I guess it would be a cross between the Terminator and the Titanic. If you could mix the two together as one, that would be fantastic.
We got to stop the boat from sinking. I'm the king of the world.
That's exactly what I was thinking too.
So Arnold would just kind of, he'd go up against the iceberg and then everybody would be fine, right?
Probably.
All right, before we get really silly, oops, too late. Why don't we let everybody know where they can get in touch with you, or if they want to view, we know your name is attached to all of your social media links. Is there anything else that people should be aware of?
Well, I am working on my book, so I'm hoping to have that out within the next few months. It's about a girl who was born with two souls and only one soul has a human form.
Like a sci-fi?
Kind of. Okay. She ends up, when she turns 13, she ends up, her soul ends up joining the body of the other girl. And they realize that they actually have some magnetic energy power that their body drains from electronics.
That's very different. That's very unique.
Thank you. It's called Magnetism.
Magnetism. I like it. I like it. So everybody be looking out for the book called Magnetism.
Yes.
And are you going to play the older version of the girl?
Probably not.
You'll be the on-set advisor, right? Just to make sure that they get your vision right, right?
Yes.
Okay.
It's definitely got a lot of twists and turns in it. I'm really enjoying writing it. I've always liked writing, so.
Well, best of luck with the book. And, you know, when it comes out, we can throw a link on for Amazon so people can check it out too. Hope my rebels are pretty responsive to stuff like that.
Yep.
All right. So I'd like to say thank you very much for coming by. Her name is Dawn Moultrup. Keep an eye on her because you will be seeing her on the movie screen. And we hope that you will be voting for her in this upcoming competition. And we'll give you her links in the show notes. Thanks so much, Dawn.
Thank you very much.
Thanks again to Dawn Moultrup for swinging by the Sherpa Screening Room. And make sure that you vote for Dawn. And you do that through the Facebook page called International Runway Model Search. Find that page first. And then in order to vote, you have to follow the page and it will give you the option to vote for her. I'll have the link on my show notes, the Sherpa Director's Sheet. Best of luck to Dawn, and we hope to see you up on a billboard in Vegas. Coming up after this commercial break, we'll be talking to prop maker Dave Hamblin. Moving on to the second part of our show, here's my interview with prop maker Dave Hamblin, also known as Hambone. Dave's worked in the industry for quite some time, and he was following in the footsteps of his stepfather, Ward, who also had a lengthy career in Hollywood as a behind-the-scenes guy. You will hear stories from Dave about his life as a prop builder and a lot of Hollywood star encounters with signing his baseballs. Without any further ado, let's talk to Dave.
Hello, Rebels. Welcome to the Sherpa Screening Room. I'm here on the telephone, going old school, with Hambone himself, Mr. David Hamblin. He is what is known in Hollywood as a prop maker, but he's got a lengthy story about his time in the business because it runs through his family, so we've welcomed him on here to hear some of his anecdotes and some of his views on what's going on in Hollywood today. How you doing, David?
Oh, everything's good.
Right, why don't we just jump right into it? You want to tell us a little bit about, like, how your dad got started and how you used to go with him?
Oh, yeah. Well, let's go back to 1974, Martha's Vineyard, when they showed up to do Jaws. And they got all these big old trailer trucks, giant trailer trucks, like, I don't know, there had to have been 20 of them anyway, with everything you could imagine in them. My mom had been divorced a year or so, and she was working tables at the Kelly House. And that's where my stepfather, Ward, that's where she met Ward, my dad, stepdad, waiting tables. She didn't like him. Figures that end up together, but whatever. I got in because they needed people for the movie, background people of all ages, you know. The kid that gets eaten on the raft, Jeff Voorhees, I went to school with him. We grew up, he moved there in like fourth or fifth grade, whatever. So, you know, we were in school together. We played together, all that stuff. And I was just a background kid. Went down there, they take you a bunch of pictures, tell you to talk a little, whatever, and then, you know, all of a sudden you get a phone call, we need you to be down here at, you know, 4:30 in the morning, we're going to go take you up to Gay Head, and you're going to be in the sign scene, and da-da-da, and we want you to do this, and whatever. It was fun and exciting until, like, you know, an hour or two into it, and you're just doing the same thing over and over. And over, I mean, you do. You know what I mean? It's like all of a sudden you're just bored, stupid. Okay, this isn't fun and exciting like it started out. And then, you know, of course, I was in like four different scenes, two which got used and two that didn't. Ward, one day he saw me downtown somewhere and he's like, hey, what are you doing? Want to come with me? Well, take you to the boat shed. Now he's dating my mom. So he takes me down to the boat shed and they take me in there and here's all the sharks that they're working on, which was really cool. I mean, these things were, and you're a 12-year-old kid, you know, they're huge. And they're like, here, have a T-shirt with the Jaws thing on it. You know, that's really cool. I'm like the first kid that I, in the whole group that I hang out with a Jaws shirt. I'm super cool. And then they're like, here, have shark's teeth. All of these shark's teeth, man, the hard plastic ones, the rubber ones for the bite-down sharks. It was really, of course, and I lost all of it. Gone, done. I'm a kid, dude. You don't give that kind of stuff that could be worth something later to a kid. Then Jaws ends. Ward goes back to California and told my mom, yeah, you know, come out to California, whatever. So she packs up me and my brother and two sisters, and we flew out to L.A. I hated it. You go from going to school with people that you've grown up with to being, you know, the new kid. Oh, dude, it was pretty terrible. So we came out here, you know, and went to school out here a while, and I would go to work with Ward on, like, the onion field and that kind of stuff, Close Encounters. I went home in the middle of Close Encounters, and I wasn't coming back. I went home to Martha's Vineyard. I was going to stay with my dad, finish school, just go up to 1990, and I moved out here permanently. There was no work left back there. In 1993, Ward got me in on a little movie called Pontiac Moon. You see, I caught myself there. Little movie. We'll just leave it at that.
Okay.
Got my days on that. And that was kind of cool. It was a different experience, you know. I mean, you go from building homes into building sets, and it's two completely different animals. So it's like you have to be you basically have to be retaught everything that you know about building. Although, knowing how to build a house comes in handy with a lot of this stuff, and a lot of these guys that I work with have never built anything that's going to be there for 100 years. So a lot of them don't know anything other than building fake walls. So I got in on that, and, you know, Ward kept working. Saw him a couple of times after Pontiac Moon. I ran it. He was at Sony Picture Studios a couple of times while I was over there working maintenance. I liked that more than I liked working on the features because it was more, you had a permanent job, basically. You know, you were working 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, and you're still making really good money. And you had the weekends off, too, which is, an added bonus. You're like a real human being for a minute. When we did, I was working there on and off. We did down Periscope, and I went over. I got a call, Hambone, come over here and work. We're going to do this show at Fox. So I jumped over there, and we did down Periscope, and it was cool. You know, I'm over there with a lot of the guys that I like to be around and stuff. It's a lot of fun. Some of the guys are the greatest. Some of them are really talented. Others are just gacks, but whatever. And we got it started. It was okay, and then all of a sudden we're doing this big push, and it was 7 days a week, 12 hours a day for 30 straight days. That just kills you. That you, all of a sudden, you know, a week or so into it, you don't even know what day it is anymore. You know, everything looks the same. You get up in the morning, you go to work, and it's dark. You get out at 6. By the time you get home, it's dark. So after that, I went back and just stayed. I turned down a couple of shows because I'm just going to help. They're like, hey, Bone, what are you doing? We need you on this, da-da-da-da-da. And I'm like, well, how long are we going? Oh, just a couple of weeks. And I'm like, you know what? No. You know, and I'm not talking like that. You know, I don't talk to people like that. I talked with all that, you know, that the stuff that you have to put advisory warnings on. That's how I talk to everybody anyway. So I turned down that thing you do, that movie, that thing you do, and I went back, just stayed there. Time goes by. Sony didn't want to carry people anymore, so they cut back. They got rid of the big tank that they did the cage scene in Jaws, the boat scene where the guy's head bobs out, you know?
Yeah.
They got rid of that big old tank. That was the only tank left that was made for that. It was made, had windows for the cameras, you know, watertight windows for the cameras and all that. Thing was great, man. They got rid of that. They bulldozed three stages, 18, 19, and 20, albeit they were small, but you kind of got to have them. You know, the problem with the movie industry now is that people just are doing it to make a ton of money. They really don't have any concept what the movie business is about or what those studios are for, you know what I mean? All of those things, it was, back in the day, they were small cities. You know, like my dad, when my dad got in, he worked for Universal. His dad, Harry, my step-grandfather, old granddad, he worked it out at MGM. So even when it was slow, they found stuff for you to do so they didn't lose their guys. And, they're small cities. They got welt metal shops. They got everything was fabricated there. You know, wardrobe, everything was on the lot. You didn't have to go looking for stuff. You didn't have to send people across the valley or whatever. You know, it's just now it's all about accountants. Get rid of those three stages at Sony, put up office buildings, and bring in more accountants. And the thing about that was that Sony had a building off lot that was just for that. They had their own big, I think it was a 3 or 4 story office building, and that's where all the accountants were. Well, somebody didn't like that. You know, I want to be important for a minute. Let's get rid of a couple stages, you know, lose a bunch of revenue for the studio, build another office building, sell that because, you know, in Culver City, we'll never let them buy any of that back. And they have these tours over to Sony. They got these tours, and they're charging like $25 or $30 a head, you know, and then they take all these people. When they get like 20 people together, then they take them around, and they're walking all over this lot. And there's really nothing to see, you know. Usually if they're building, depending on, like if they're just starting out, the doors are open, and you might see a couple few walls up, whatever. But for the most part, when they're getting it close to where it's what it's going to look like and everything, they roll those big doors shut so nobody can see nothing. So they walk these people through the lot, and you got to feel sorry for them. You just, these people from like Oklahoma or St. Louis or whatever came out here on vacation, and they want to see movie stars, and they want to see what we do, and you know, and they're just not. So one day we're working on stage 12. Me and my lovely assistant, Timmy, my laborer, we're over there working, fixing up a floor, and here comes a group of those people. So I said, Timmy, let's go outside and have a cigarette, listen to some of this BS for a minute. And they're telling, oh, yeah, this is where so-and-so Fitzgerald or Fitzpatrick, whatever the lady's name was, she was like a real famous actor, but she had been a diver or something, a swimmer back in the day. So they had a bunch of this stuff in there. This is where one of her stages was, and da da da. And I'm standing, and I just like, you know what, guys? If you look up high in the permanence there, you'll see those metal rods that are hanging down. Those were for the flying monkeys in the Wizard of Oz. And they're like, oh, they got to take pictures of that. And it was the biggest pile of BS. It was for curtains or something for that Fitzgerald, Fitzpatrick lady, whatever. So the next day we get a call. My boss calls us, and he calls, hey, Timmy, tell him, get Hambone and come down here to the office. So we go down the office, and Larry's out on the deck having a cigarette, and he's like, hey, I need you guys to go around up in the perms, because somebody told the guy that runs the back lot that up in the perms somewhere they had boxed up one of those flying monkeys and left it up in the permanence. And we had been up there, we're doing a bunch of stuff on all the stages. I said, Larry, you know, if there was a box up there, I would have already found it, and if there was a flying monkey in it, it would be at my house. So whatever, just go look at it. And Timmy's like, oh, this is just ridiculous. And Larry goes, yeah, I know. But it's like he said the other day, somebody told the tour, some idiot's telling these people on the tour that those hangers, hooks down on stage 12 were for the flying monkeys. And Timmy's like, there's your... And I'm like, dude, you just destroyed a perfectly good lot. So one day I'm working in the metal shop, and one of those tours goes by, and you couldn't help but feel bad for these people. There's really, you know, like I said, there's really nothing to see. And Tom Cruise was up, Hanks is up the street doing that thing with the soccer ball.
Castaway.
Yeah, right, where it's kind of like Robinson Crusoe in a soccer ball or something. Well, he comes out of his little, he's got one of those stainless or aluminum, brushed aluminum little trailers. And he comes out and he walks it, gets right in the middle of all of those people, and he's signing autographs and he's talking to them and telling them stories. Dude, he made those people's lives. Just that little act of kindness, giving those people 20 minutes of his time or whatever.
I know you were saying earlier that both, like, you and your stepdad, there were certain actors that you knew, and there were some that you liked and some that you didn't like. Do you want to talk about some of the actors that you liked that you knew?
Well, I was just going to go there. I was just going to tell you about old Julia Roberts, because she was over at Sony doing America's Sweethearts with Catherine Zeta-Jones and John Cusack. I saw her over there one day, and I'm like, excuse me, would you be so kind as to sign a baseball for me? Oh, dude. She made it sound like I was asking her to build the Bay Bridge or something. Just was not a nice person at all, man. I mean, oh, my God. It's not like, not like somebody walked up to her and hit her up for $12 million or something. You know what I mean? A couple days later, I know that Zeta Jones is there, so at lunchtime, I finish my lunch, I jump on the cart, I go up to Main Street, and I see all the cars getting ready to go off lot for lunch, take the actors to wherever they want to go, you know? And I knew the guys, because I've been at Sony forever, and I said, I'm talking to one of the drivers that was, you know, one of the captains that Zeta Jones is driver, and I'm like, dude, do you think you could get me a ball sign for me? And he's like, oh, you know, she's just super busy, and she's not going to have time for that. And I'm like, really, dude? You know, and here she comes down the street with a cigarette, you know. And I went over, and I said, watch this, dude. And I went over, I said, excuse me, Miss Jones, would you be so kind? She's like, oh, yeah, no worries. And she's left-handed. And so, you know, a baseball's curved, so you have to, she didn't hold the ball, I'm holding the ball, and she's signing it, and I have to roll the ball. What a beautiful person. I mean, seriously, what a nice person. And she's just drop-dead beautiful as well. You know, how come none of my girlfriends ever looked like this ever? You know? And how come none of my girlfriends are ever nice like this ever? And then there was another time, man, I got to meet Carol O'Connor over there. And anyone that knows me knows that Carol O'Connor and Bugs Bunny are my idols, period. They're asking you in grade school, what do you want to be when you grow up? And you're going to say, what do you want to be? Hambone, what about you? I want to be either Bugs Bunny or Archie Bunker, or both. And I am, basically. I just don't make the money that they make. So there he is one day, dude, and we're going up. We got sent somewhere for something, and we're driving up by Main Street, And there's Carol O'Connor going into stage 18 for Party of Five. He played the grandfather. And I'm like, Timmy, stop. And he's like, dude, no. And I'm like, I just jumped off. And I'm getting off. I jump off the cart, and he stops. And I grab my baseball, and I run over, and I'm like, oh, I'm like, dude, excuse me, but I'm like your biggest fan ever. Would you mind signing the ball? He's like, oh, no, not at all. And he's little. He was a little guy, you know, maybe 5'9", 5'10", tops. No, he wasn't 5'10". He was like 5'8 or 5'9". He was a short dude. And he signed the ball. He puts his glasses on, and he pulls out a pen, and he's got my ball. And right as he's about to sign it, he looks at me, and he's like, can't you see? I ain't no ball player. And I'm like, oh, I can and see that. You know what I'm saying? It was just funny, dude. I still have that ball as one. I have all three of those baseballs I was talking about. You know, 6 months later, like, I think it was like 6 months after his son had died, he died. And then, of course, you know, I met Harrison Ford and stuff. And Harrison's the great. Harrison Ford's a guy's guy, man. He's just, I don't know if it's because he's a pothead, supposedly, or what. But he's a great guy.
I believe he used to be a carpenter as well.
His personal wardrobe guy was my buddy Nick's dad. So anyway, I went up and he's like, yeah, where's the ball? I'm like, oh, it's down the street on my cart, you know, and I'm not going to ask him to go. And he's like, well, come on, let's go. And he walks down the street with me, and I'm like, and he says, we're talking just about whatever. And I said, hey, I heard you used to be a carpenter or something. And he's like, yeah, but I wasn't very good. That's why I'm doing this. And I said, well, you're doing a whole lot better now than you were then.
We have the world's only Oscar winner baseball collection.
I know, right? Dude, pretty cool. You know, well, but the thing you got to do, though, you want to hang on to them till these people die. Then they're worth more money. And the thing about it is everybody says to me, you know, Hambo, why do you have them sign baseball? You know, why didn't you get a signed picture? Because everybody has signed pictures.
Why don't we talk a little bit about the work that you've done? Now, obviously, you've done a lot of movies and TV shows in your time there from the 90s. Are there any memorable sets that you remember working on?
The coolest one that comes to mind first is when we did the Valkyrie reshoot, and we had to go down to this warehouse and build. They had a couple of these Sherman tanks that they cut them all up and made them look, you know, rewelded everything to look like Panzer IVs. You couldn't hide the fact that it was, you know, Panzer IVs on a Sherman suspension. So we had to make all these skirts to hang over the sides to make it look like the wheels and the, you know, all of that, the gears and wheels of a German tank. And we did enough for like three of them, I think, and they looked so cool. We went out to Lucerne, out to the desert, where they redid the Africa Corps scene, and there's like, they got like 200 people out there, 200 people that are extras. There are probably about 100 of us because special effects was out there, the painters were out there, and a bunch of us, and we had to set up this whole column of tanks and trucks, motorcycle with a sidecar, all of that. Pretty, it looked, with all those people, then you add the 200 people in the garb, you know, the uniforms and everything, and it was like you step back in time. I mean, it looked incredible. And then, of course, they're doing the special effects where the airplane comes down and strafes the column and blows it up and all of that. It was so cool. I got pictures of that somewhere. So cool. And, of course, you know, now one of the guys I worked with on that took a bunch of pictures, he passed away a couple of years ago. You know, and that's what happens, man. You know, this stuff, these guys die and stuff, and no one has any of these really cool stories anymore or anything.
I was wondering, you know, knowing what you know and with your experience, you must look at movies and television a little bit differently. Are you paying more attention to the backgrounds when you watch a movie or TV show?
Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. You know, it's really funny though, because we did. I was doing features for the most part. I did features for probably the better part of my 26 years. I did 9 years of maintenance. but I worked on a lot of stuff for those features in that time period that were at Sony. Then one day I was back doing features. I had just finished working on Jack and Jill, which was probably, the build was really cool. The movie itself was probably one of the worst movies that I've ever seen. And Adam Sandler, to be fair, I don't care much for his acting, but he is a really good guy and all of that. And that was a really trippy one. That was also very cool. Somewhere I have a baseball that's signed by Ronnie Howard, Gary Sinise, Bill Paxton, Tom Hanks, and and Kevin Bacon, the four astronauts, and Dave Schultz, who was actually one of the last astronauts to walk on the moon. He was our technical advisor, and he signed it as well, so somewhere there's that. And, you know, this is all stuff my grandson's going to make a lot of good money off of, you know. But, you know, so we went over there. We did this other show. I was going that way anyway. We did this other TV show. We had the show I was over on was the last show that Robin Williams worked on, The Crazy Ones. So after that went down, and that show got canceled, and that was, you know, I saw Robin over there on that, and I didn't ask him to sign a ball. He just looked done, dude. He just looked tired and done. You know what I mean? Worn out. It was pretty sad to see somebody that, you know, you've always thought was just the greatest, and I mean, he's just hammered on, you know? So we had to do, we struck that stage down, cleared it out, and started building this up for this other show called The Weird Loners that they never did anything. It got shelved. After they finished the pilot, they shelved it. But we built this really incredible apartment set. It was like a one main entryway with a set of stairs to each side, and there's like an apartment on each side of the stairs, you know what I mean? Like a duplex or something. And it was the old-fashioned New York design, so it was pretty rad. And we had to, after that was done, we had to build across the street on on New York Street. They let us take down this whole fascia plate and replace it with the exterior of our house. On stage, you had all the interiors with the wing walls and all of that. My dad was the worst, dude. He would just pick the stuff apart for you, you know. He would be like, oh, did you notice that in the last scene? That wasn't like that. Look at it now. It's not even close, you know. And it's like if you came over to the house and watched Jaws with me, okay?
Right.
Every time they show a certain part of the island or whatever, because I grew up there, I lived there, I'm from there. It's like, yeah, you're watching Jaws, you're being entertained, but at the same time, now that I live here, it's like I get to look at home.
You said when they filmed that movie, it was actually in the colder months. It wasn't during the summer.
Dude, yeah. They showed up in, like, the beginning of March, okay? They started shooting, like, all the beach scenes and stuff like that the end of March, the first couple of weeks of April. Dude, when Jeff Voorhees got the part to be the kid on the raft, I was so happy that it wasn't me, because you know how cold the water is? But, you know, yeah, they did, and they were, you know, a lot of that stuff, and that's what you see, too. I'm in the beach scene, the sign scene up at Gay Head, where Scheider, Dreyfuss are arguing with the mayor, and you notice, no one even notices that they're all wearing, like, the only person in that scene with short sleeves is me. So that was that for the day, but it took like an hour to drive out to Gay Head and then an hour to get back to Edgartown. But, you know, they catered lunch and all that.
He was nice to keep the swearing down to a minimum, folks. And as he's David Hamblin, better known as Hambone, thank you so much for doing this interview.
All right, man. Thank you for your time.
Once again, special thanks to both Dawn and Dave for their interviews and spending a little time with me in the Sherpa screening room. And also, thanks to you for spending a little time with me in the Sherpa screening room. You can listen to this show and my other shows on your favorite podcast apps or follow it on my website, sherpalution.com, and you can follow the show on social media at sherpalution at either Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. Don't forget, today there is another episode out. It's my interview with director Michael Mueller of
the new movie, The E-Listers. And I had such a great time talking to him. You're going to love his enthusiasm. I hope you check it out. And don't worry, next week, we've got another bonus episode, too, with Selene Castrovilla. Before, we have our season 2 finale with Christopher Carter of From Where I Sit. And we had a lot of fun in both of those interviews, too. So I'm hoping that you'll be checking those out. And, of course, the following week after that, we'll be having the season 2 wrap up before Hollywood Week. 5 days of the Sherpa Screening Room interviews. 5 straight days, Monday through Friday. I'm going to be so tired. I'm going to need a nap. While I'm thinking about taking a nap, here's somebody who unfortunately did not enter the modeling contest, but could probably win it hands down because he looks like a young Elle McPherson in his evening gown. Mr. Bruce, please show everybody out of here. Hey, vote for Dawn. Vote for Dawn. Vote for Dawn. Bye-bye, Rebels. Viva la Sherpalution.
Thanks for listening to Too Many Podcasts. Please disperse. You can go home now. I said you can go home now. Viva la Sherpalition. Viva la Sherpalition. Yell, come back now, you hear?